sitting down in the chair beside my bed and staring at my shoulder. I nod. This isn't my first mending. When you're as brittle as I was born, the pain of mending is only second to the pain of the original injury. Basically, another Tuesday. Please, Vi, Dane begs quietly. Please switch quadrants. If not for you, then for me. Because I didn't step in fast enough. I should have stopped her. I can't protect you. I wish I'd figured out his plan before taking Winifred's potion so I could have explained better. None of this is his fault, but he's going to shoulder the blame just like he always does. Instead, I take a deep breath and say, I made my choice. Get back to the quadrant, Dane, Nolan orders without looking up. If she was any other first year, you would already be gone. Dane's anguished gaze holds mine, and I insist. Go. I'll find you at formation in the morning. I don't want him to see this anyway. He swallows the defeat and nods once, then turns and walks through the separation in the curtains without another word. I sincerely hope my choice today doesn't end up destroying my best friend later. Ready? Nolan asks, his hands hovering above my shoulder. Bite down, Winifred holds a strap of leather in front of my mouth, and I take it between my teeth. Here we go, Nolan mutters, lifting his hands over my shoulder. His brow furrows in concentration before he makes a twisting motion. White, hot agony erupts in my shoulder. My teeth slice into the leather as I scream, bearing down for one heartbeat. Then two, before blacking out. The barracks are nearly full by the time I make my way back later that night, my throbbing right arm cradled in a light blue sling that makes me an even bigger target, if that's possible. Slings say weak. They say breakable. They say liability to the wing. If I break this easily on the mat, what's going to happen if I get on the back of a dragon? The sun has long since gone down, but the hall is lit by the soft glow of mage lights as the other first-year women get ready for bed. I offer a smile to a girl who's holding a blood-speckled cloth to her swollen lip, and she returns it with a wince. I count three empty bunks in our row, but that doesn't mean those cadets are dead, right? They could be in the healer quadrant, just like I was, or maybe they're in the bathing chambers. You're here! Rhiannon jumps off her bed, already dressed in her sleeping shorts and top, relief in her eyes and smile as she sees me. I'm here, I assure her. I'm already down one shirt, but I'm here. You can get another at Central Issue tomorrow. She looks like she might hug me, but glances at my sling and backs up a step, sitting on the edge of her bunk, as I do the same with mine facing her. How bad is it? It's gonna hurt for the next few days, but I'll be fine as long as I keep it immobilized. It'll be all healed up before we start on-mat challenges. I have 2 weeks to figure out how to keep this from happening again. I'll help you get ready, she promises. You're the only friend I have in here, so I'd rather you didn't die when it gets real. A corner of her mouth lifts in a wry smile. I'll try my best not to, I grin through the throbbing ache in my shoulder and arm. The tonic has long since worn off, and it's starting to hurt like hell. And I'll help you with history. I brace my weight on my left hand, and it slides just beneath my pillow. There's something there. We'll be unstoppable, Rhiannon declares, her gaze tracking Tara, the dark-haired, curvy girl from Moraine, as she walks past our bunks. I pull out a small book. No, it's a journal, with a folded note on top that says Violet in Mira's handwriting. One-handed, I open the note. Violet, I stayed long enough to read the rolls this morning, and you aren't on them, thank gods. I can't stay. I'm needed back with my wing, and even if I could stay, they wouldn't let me see you anyway. I bribed a scribe to sneak this into your bunk. I hope you know how proud I am to be your sister. Brennan wrote this for me the summer before I entered the quadrant. It saved me, and it can save you, too. I added my own bits of hard-earned wisdom here and there, but mostly it's his. And I know he'd want you to have it. He'd want you to live. Love, Mira. I swallow past the knot in my throat and set the note aside.
What is it?
Rhiannon asks.
It's my brother's.
The words barely make it past my lips as I open the cover. Mother burned everything he owned after he died, as tradition dictates. It's been ages since I've seen the bold strokes of his handwriting. And yet, there they are. My chest tightens and a fresh wave of grief sweeps through me. The Book of Brennan. I read along with the first page and then flip to the second.
Mira, you're a Sorengale, so you will survive. Perhaps not as spectacularly as I have, but we all can't live up to my standards, can we?
All kidding aside, this is everything I've learned. Keep it safe, keep it hidden. You have to live, because Violet is watching. You can't let her see you fall. Brennan. Tears prick my eyes, but I blink them back.
It's just his journal, I lie, thumbing through the pages.
I can hear his quippy, sarcastic tone as I skim over his words, as though he's standing here, making light of every danger with a wink and a grin.
Damn, I miss him.
He died 5 years ago.
Oh,
that's... Rhiannon leans in, her eyes heavy with sympathy. We don't always burn everything either. Sometimes it's nice to have something, you know?
Yeah, I whisper.
It's everything to have this. And yet I know Mom will toss it in the fire if she ever finds it. Rhiannon sits back on her bed, opening her history book. And I fall back into Brennan's history, starting on the third page.
You survived Parapet.
Good. Be observant the next few days, and don't do anything to draw attention to yourself. I've sketched a map that shows you not only where the classrooms are, but where the instructors meet too. I know you're nervous about challenges, but you shouldn't be. Not with that right hook of yours. The matches might seem random, but they're not. What the instructors don't tell you is that they decide challenges the week before, Mira. Any cadet can request a challenge, yes, but instructors will assign your matches based on weeding out the weakest. That means once the real hand-to-hand starts, the instructors already know who you'll be up against that day. Here's the secret. If you know where to look and can get out without being seen, you'll know who you're fighting so you can prepare. I suck in a breath and devour the rest of the entry, hope blossoming in my chest. If I know who I'm fighting, then I can begin the battle before we even step on the mat. My mind spins, a plan taking shape. 2 weeks, that's how long I have to get everything I'll need before challenges begin. And no one knows the grounds of Bezgaeth like I do. It's all here. A slow smile spreads across my face. I know how to survive. Chapter 7. A quote from Addendum 5.2, Bezgaeth War College Code of Conduct. In the best interest of preserving peace within Navarre, no more than 3 cadets carrying rebellion relics may be assigned to any squad of any quadrant. A quote from Addendum 5.3, Bezgaeth War College Code of Conduct. In addition to last year's changes, marked ones assembling in groups of 3 or more will now be considered an act of seditious conspiracy and is hereby a capital offense.
Damn it, I mutter as my toe catches a rock and I stumble in the waist-high grass that grows alongside the river beneath the citadel. The moon is nice and full, illuminating my way, but it means I'm sweating to death in this cloak to keep hidden, just in case anyone else is out here wandering after curfew. The Jacobos River rushes with summer runoff from the peaks above, and the currents are fast and deadly this time of year, especially coming out of the steep drop of the ravine. No wonder that first year died when he fell in yesterday during our downtime. Since Parapet, our squad is the only one in the quadrant not to lose anyone. But I know that's unlikely to last much longer in this ruthless school. Tightening my heavy satchel over my sling, I move closer to the river, along the ancient line of oaks, where I know one vine of fonally berries will be coming into season soon. Ripe, the purple berries are tart and barely edible. But picked prematurely and left to dry, will make an excellent weapon in the growing arsenal that 9 nights of sneaking out has given me. This was exactly the reason I brought the Book of Poisons with me. Challenges start next week, and I need every possible advantage. Spotting the boulder I've used as a landmark for the past 5 years, I count the trees on the riverbank. 1, 2, 3, I whisper, spotting the exact oak I'll need. Its branches spread wide and high, some even daring to reach out over the river. Lucky for me, the lowest is easily climbable, even more so with the grass oddly trampled underneath. A twinge of pain shoots up through my shoulder as I slip my right arm out of the sling and begin to climb by moonlight and memory. The pain quickly fades to an ache, just like it has every evening while Rhiannon has been kicking my ass on the mat. Hopefully tomorrow Nolan will let me out of the annoying sling for good. The fonally vine looks deceptively like ivy as it winds up the trunk, but I've scaled this particular tree enough times to know this is the one. I've just never had to climb the damn thing in a cloak before. It's a pain in my ass. The fabric catches on almost every branch as I move upward, slowly and steadily, climbing past the wide branch where I used to spend hours reading. Shit! My foot slips on the bark and my heart stutters for a heartbeat, while my feet find better holds. This would be so much easier during the day, but I can't risk being caught. Bark scrapes my palms as I climb higher. The tips of the vine leaves are white at this height, barely visible in the mottled moonlight through the canopy. But I grin as I find exactly what I've been searching for. There you are. The purple berries are a gorgeous, unripe lavender. Perfect. Digging my fingernails into the branch above me, I manage to keep from wobbling long enough to retrieve an empty vial in my satchel and uncork it with my teeth. Then I pluck just enough berries off the vine to fill the glass and shove the stopper back on. Between these, the mushrooms I've already hunted tonight, and the other items I've collected, I should be able to make it through the next month of challenges. I'm almost down the tree, only a handful of branches to go, when I spot movement beneath me and pause. Hopefully it's just a deer. But it's not. 2 figures in black cloaks, apparently tonight's disguise of choice, walk under the protection of the tree. The smaller one leans back against the lowest limb, removing her hood to reveal a half-shaved head of pink hair I know all too well. Imogen, the squad mate who nearly ripped off my arm 10 days ago. My stomach tightens, then knots as the second rider slips off his own hood. Zayden Ryerson. Oh, shit. There's maybe 15 feet between us and nothing and no one out here to stop him from killing me. Fear clenches my throat and holds tight as I white-knuckle the branches around me, debating the merits of holding my breath so he can't hear me versus falling out of the tree if I faint from lack of oxygen. They begin speaking, but I can't hear what they're saying, not with the river rushing by. Relief fills my lungs. If I can't hear them, they can't hear me either, as long as I sit tight. But all it takes is for him to look up, and I'll be toast. Literally, if he decides to feed me to that blue dagger tail of his. The moonlight I was thankful for a few minutes ago has now become my biggest liability. Slowly, carefully, quietly, I move out of the patchy moonlight to the next branch over, cloaking myself in shadow. What is he doing out here with Imogen? Are they lovers? Friends? It's absolutely none of my business, and yet I can't help but wonder if she's the kind of woman he goes for. One whose beauty is only outmatched by her brutality. They fucking deserve each other. Zayden turns away from the river, as though he's looking for someone. And sure enough, more riders arrive, gathering under the tree. They're all dressed in black cloaks as they shake hands. And they all have rebellion relics. My eyes widen as I count. There are almost 24 of them, a few third years and a couple of seconds, but the rest are all firsts. I know the rules. Marked ones can't gather in groups larger than 3. They're committing a capital offense simply by being together. It's obviously a meeting of some sort, and I feel like a cat clinging to the leaf-tipped limbs of this tree while the wolves circle below. Their gathering could be completely harmless, right? Maybe they're homesick, like when the cadets from the Moraine province all spend a Saturday at the nearby lake just because it reminds them of the ocean they miss so much. Or maybe marked ones are plotting to burn Besgaeth to the ground and finish what their parents started. I can sit up here and ignore them, but my complacency, my fear, could get people killed if they're down there scheming. Telling Dane is the right thing to do, but I can't even hear what they're saying. Shit, shit, shit. Nausea turns in my stomach. I have to get closer. Keeping myself on the opposite side of the trunk and sticking to the shadows that wrap around me, I climb down another branch with sloth-like speed, holding my breath as I test each branch with a fraction of my weight before lowering myself. Their voices are still muffled by the river, but I can hear the loudest of them, a tall, dark-haired man with pale skin, whose shoulders take up twice the space of any first year, standing opposite Zayden's position and wearing the rank of a third year. "We've already lost Sutherland and Luperco," he says, but I can't make out the response. It takes 2 more rungs of branches before their words are clear. My heart pounds like it's trying to escape my ribs. I'm close enough for any one of them to see if they look hard enough. Well, everyone except Zayden, since his back is turned toward me. "Like it or not, we're going to have to stick together if you want to survive until graduation," Imogen says. "One little hop to the right, and I could repay that callous shoulder maneuver she pulled on me with a quick kick to her head. I just happen to value my own life more than I want revenge at the moment, so I keep my feet to myself." "And if they find out we're meeting?" a first-year girl with an olive complexion asks, her eyes darting around the circle. "We've done this for 2 years, and they've never found out," Zayden responds, folding his arms and leaning back against the limb below my right. "They're not going to unless one of you tells. And if you tell, I'll know." The threat is obvious in his tone. "Like Garrick said, we've already lost 2 first years to their own negligence. There are only 41 of us in the Riders Quadrant, and we don't want to lose any of you. But we will if you don't help yourselves. The odds are always stacked against us. And trust me, every other Navarian in the Quadrant will look for reasons to call you a traitor or force you to fail." There's a muttered assent, and my breath hitches at the intensity in his voice. Damn it. I don't want to find a single thing about Zayden Ryerson admirable. And yet here he is, being all annoyingly admirable. Asshole. Have to admit, it would be nice if a high-ranking rider from my province gave a shit if the rest of us from the province lived or died. "How many of you are getting your asses handed to you in hand-to-hand?" Zayden asks. 4 hands shoot into the air, none of which belong to the spiky, blonde-haired first-year standing with his arms crossed, a head taller than most others. Liam Mari. He's in second squad, tail section of our wing, and already the top cadet in our year. He practically ran across the parapet and destroyed every opponent on assessment day. Shit, Zayden swears, and I would give anything to see his expression as he lifts a hand to his face. The big one, Garrick, sighs.
I'll teach them.
I recognize him now. He's the flame section leader in fourth wing, my direct superior above Dane. Zayden shakes his head.
You're our best fighter.
You're our best fighter, a second year near Zayden counters with a quick grin. He's handsome, with tawny brown skin crowned by a cloud of black curls and a litany of patches on what I can see of his uniform under his cloak. His features are close enough to Zayden's that they might be related. Cousins, maybe? Fen Ryerson had a sister, if I remember correctly. Shit, what was the guy's name? It's been years since I read the records, but I think it started with a B. Dirtiest fighter, maybe, Imogen snarks. Most everyone laughs, and even the first years crack a smile.
Fucking ruthless is more like it, Garrick adds.
There's a general consensus of nods, including one from Liam Mari. Garrick is our best fighter, but Imogen is right up there with him, and she's a hell of a lot more patient, Zayden notes, which is just ludicrous considering she didn't seem too patient while breaking my arm. So, the four of you split yourselves up between the two of them for training. A group of three won't draw any unwanted attention. What else is giving you trouble?
I can't do this, a gangly first year says, rolling his shoulders inward and lifting his slim fingers to his face.
What do you mean?
Zayden asks, his voice taking on a hard edge.
I can't do this, the smaller one shakes his head. The death, the fighting, any of it.
The pitch of his voice rises with every statement.
A guy had his neck snapped right in front of me on assessment day. I want to go home. Can you help me with that?
Every head swings towards Zayden. No, Zayden shrugs. You're not going to make it. Best accept it now and not take up any more of my time. It's all I can do to smother my gasp, and some of the others in the group don't bother trying.
What a dick.
The smaller guy looks stricken, and I can't help but feel bad for him.
That was a little harsh, cousin, the second ear who looks a little like Zayden says, lifting his eyebrows.
What do you want me to say, Bodhi?
Zayden cocks his head to the side, his voice calm and even.
I can't save everyone, especially not someone who isn't willing to work to save themselves. Damn, Zayden.
Garrick rubs the bridge of his nose.
Way to give a pep talk. If they need a fucking pep talk, then we both know they're not flying out of the quadrant on graduation day. Let's get real. I can hold their hands and make them a bunch of bullshit empty promises about everyone making it through if that helps them sleep. But in my experience, the truth is far more valuable.
He turns his head, and I can only assume he's looking at the panicked first year.
In war, people die. It's not glorious like the bards sing about either. It's snapped necks and 200-foot falls. There's nothing romantic about scorched earth or the scent of sulfur. This, he gestures back toward the citadel, isn't some fable where everyone makes it out alive. It's hard, cold, uncaring reality. Not everyone here is going to make it home, to whatever's left of our homes. And make no mistake, we are at war every time we step foot in the quadrant.
He leans forward slightly.
So if you won't get your shit together and fight to live, then no, you're not going to make it.
Only crickets dare to break the silence.
Now, someone give me a problem I can actually solve, Zayden orders.
Battle brief, a first year I recognize says softly. Her bunk is only a row away from Rhiannon's and mine. Shit, what's her name? There are too many women in the hall to know everyone, but I'm certain she's in Third Wing. It's not that I can't keep up, but the information, she shrugs. That's a tough one, Imogen responds, turning to look at Zayden. Her profile in the moonlight is almost unrecognizable as the same person who shredded my shoulder. That Imogen is cruel, vicious even. But the way she's looking at Zayden softens her eyes, her mouth, her whole posture as she tucks a short strand of pink hair behind her ear. You learn what they teach you, Zayden says to the first year, his voice taking a hard edge. Keep what you know, but recite whatever they tell you to. My brow furrows. What the hell does he mean by that? Battle Brief is one of the classes taught by scribes to keep the quadrant up to date on all non-classified troop movements and battle lines. The only things we're asked to recite are recent events and general knowledge of what's going on near the front lines. Anyone else? Zayden asks. You'd better ask now. We don't have all night. It hits me then. Other than being gathered in a group of more than three, there's nothing wrong with what they're doing here. There's no plot, no coup, no danger. It's just a group of older riders counseling first years from their province. But if Dane knew, he'd be honor bound to. When do we get to kill Violet Sorengale? A guy toward the back asks. My blood turns to ice. The murmur of assent among the group sends a jolt of terror down my spine. Yeah, Zayden, Imogen says sweetly, lifting her pale green eyes to him. When do we finally get to have our revenge? He turns just enough for me to see his profile and the scar that crosses his face as he narrows his eyes at Imogen. I told you already, the youngest Sorengale is mine. I'll handle her when the time is right. He'll handle me? My muscles thaw with the heat of indignation. I'm not some inconvenience to be handled. My short-lived admiration of Zayden is over. Didn't you already learn that lesson, Imogen? The look-alike Zayden chides from halfway down the circle. What I hear, Atos has you scrubbing dinner dishes for the next month for using your powers on the mat. Imogen's head snaps in his direction. Her mother is responsible for the execution of my mom and sister. I should have done more than just snap her shoulder. Her mom is responsible for the capture of nearly all our parents, Garrick counters, folding his arms over his wide chest. Not her daughter. Punishing children for the sins of their parents is the Navarian way, not the Tirish. So we get conscripted because of what our parents did years ago and shoved into this death sentence of a college, Imogen starts. In case you didn't notice, she's in the same death sentence of a college, Garrick retorts. Seems like she's already suffering the same fate. Am I seriously watching them debate over whether I should be punished for being Lilith Sorengale's daughter? Don't forget her brother was Brennan Sorengale, Zayden adds. She has just as much reason to hate us as we do her. He pointedly looks at Imogen and the first year who raised the question. And I'm not going to tell you again. She is mine to handle. Anyone feel like arguing? Silence reigns. Good. Then get back to bed and go in threes. He motions with his head, and they slowly disperse, walking away in groups of threes, just like he ordered. Zayden is the last to leave. I draw in a slow breath. Holy shit, I just might live through this. But I have to be sure they're gone. I don't move a muscle, even when my thighs cramp and my fingers lock as I count to 500 in my head, breathing as evenly as possible to soften the beats of my galloping heart. Only when I'm sure I'm alone, when the squirrels scurry past on the ground, do I finish climbing from the tree, jumping the last 4 feet to the grassy floor. Zanal must have a soft spot for me because I'm the luckiest woman on the continent. A shadow lunges behind me and I open my mouth to scream, but my air supply is cut off by an elbow around my neck as I'm yanked against a hard chest. "Scream and you die," he whispers, and my stomach plummets as the elbow is replaced by the sharp bite of a dagger at my throat. I freeze. I'd recognize the rough pitch of Zayden's voice anywhere. "Fucking Sorengale." His hand yanks back the hood of my cloak. "How did you know?" My tone is outright indignant, but whatever. If he's going to kill me, I'm not going down as some simpering little beggar. "Let me guess, you could smell my perfume? Isn't that what always gives the heroine away in books?" He scoffs. "I command shadows. But sure, it was your perfume that gave you away." He lowers the knife and steps away. I gasp. "Your signet is a shadow wielder?" No wonder he's risen so high in rank. Shadow wielders are incredibly rare and highly coveted in battle, able to disorient entire drifts of griffins, if not take them down, depending upon the signet's strength.
"What? Atos hasn't warned you not to get caught alone in the dark with me yet?"
His voice is like rough velvet along my skin, and I shiver, then draw my own blade from the sheath at my thigh and raise it as I spin toward him, ready to defend myself to the death. "Is this how you plan to handle me?"
"Eavesdropping, were we?"
He arches a black brow and sheathes his dagger like I couldn't possibly pose a threat to him, which only serves to piss me off even more.
"Now I might actually have to kill you."
There's an undertone of truth in those mocking eyes.
"This is just bullshit."
"Then go ahead and get it over with." I unsheath another dagger, this one from beneath my cloak where it was strapped in at my ribs, and back up a couple of feet to give me distance to throw them, if he doesn't rush me. He pointedly looks at one dagger, then the other, and sighs, folding his arms across his chest.
"That stance is really the best defense you can muster? No wonder Imogen nearly ripped your arm off."
"I'm more dangerous than you think," I flat out bluster.
"So I see. I'm quaking in my boots."
The corner of his mouth rises into a mocking smirk.
"Fucking asshole."
I flip the daggers in my hand, pinching them at the tips, then flick my wrists and fire them past his head, one on each side. They land solidly in the trunk of the tree behind him.
"You missed."
He doesn't even flinch.
"Did I?"
I reach for my last two blades. "Why don't you back up a couple of steps and test that theory?" Curiosity flares in his eyes, but it's gone in the next second, masked by cold, mocking indifference. Every one of my senses is on high alert, but the shadows around me don't slide in as he moves backward, his eyes locked with mine. His back hits the tree, and the hilts of my daggers brush his ears. "Tell me again that I missed," I threaten, taking the dagger in my right hand by the tip.
"Fascinating. You look all frail and breakable. But you're really a violent little thing, aren't you?"
An appreciative smile curves his perfect lips as shadows dance up the trunk of the oak, taking the form of fingers. They pluck the daggers from the tree and bring them to Zayden's waiting hands. My breath abandons me with a sharp exhale. He has the kind of power that could end me without him having to so much as lift a finger.
Shadow wielding.
The futility of even trying to defend myself against him is laughable. I hate how beautiful he is, how lethal his abilities make him as he strides toward me, shadows curling around his footsteps. He's like one of those poisonous flowers I've read about from the Cygnes forest to the east. His allure is a warning not to get too close, and I am definitely too close. Switching my grip to the hilts of my daggers, I prepare for the attack.
"You should show that little trick to Jack Barlow,"
Zayden says, turning his palms upward and offering me my daggers.
I'm sorry?
This is a trick. It has to be a trick. He moves closer, and I lift my blade. My heart stumbles, the beat irregular as fear floods my system.
The neck-snapping first year who's very publicly vowed to slaughter you?
Zayden clarifies as my blade presses against his cloak at the level of his abdomen. He reaches under my own cloak and slides one blade into the sheath at my thigh, then pulls back the side of my cloak and pauses. His gaze locks onto the length of my braid where it falls over my shoulder. And I could swear he stops breathing for a heartbeat before he slides the remaining dagger into one of the sheaths at my ribs.
He'd probably think twice about plotting your murder if you threw a few daggers at his head.
This is bizarre. It has to be some kind of game meant to confuse me, right? And if so, he's playing it really fucking well.
Because the honor of my murder belongs to you, I challenge. You wanted me dead long before your little club chose my tree to meet under, so I imagine you've all but buried me in your mind by now.
He glances at the dagger poised at his stomach.
Do you plan on telling anybody about my little club?
His eyes meet mine, and there's nothing but cold, calculating death waiting there.
No, I answer truthfully, suppressing a shiver. Why not?
He tilts his head to the side, examining my face like I'm an oddity. It's illegal for the children of separatist officers to assemble in groups larger than three, I'm well aware. I've lived at Bazgaiath longer than you.
I lift my chin. And you're not going to run off to mommy or your precious little Dane and tell them we've been assembling?
His gaze narrows on mine. My stomach twists just like it did before I stepped out onto the parapet. Like my body knows that whatever action I take next will determine my lifespan.
You were helping them.
I don't see why that should be punished.
It wouldn't be fair to him or the others. Was their little meeting illegal? Absolutely. Should they die for it? Absolutely not. And that's exactly what will happen if I tell.
Those first years will be executed for nothing more than asking for tutoring, and the senior cadets will join them just because they helped.
I'm not going to tell.
He looks at me like he's trying to see through me, and ice prickles my scalp. My hand is steady, but my nerves tremble at what the next 30 seconds might bring. He can kill me right here, toss my body into the river, and no one will know I'm gone until they find me downstream. But I won't let him end me without drawing his blood first. That's for damn sure.
Interesting, he says softly. We'll see if you keep your word. And if you do, then, unfortunately, it looks like I owe you a favor.
Then he steps away, turns, and walks off, heading back toward the staircase and the cliff that leads up to the citadel.
Wait.
What? You're not going to handle me? I call after him, shock raising my brows.
Not tonight, he tosses over his shoulder.
I scoff. What are you waiting for?
It's no fun if you expect it, he answers, striding into the darkness. Now get back to bed before your wing leader realizes you're out after curfew.
What? I gawk after him. You're my wing leader. But he's already disappeared into the shadows, leaving me talking to myself like a fool. He didn't even ask what was in my satchel. A slow smile spreads across my face as I tuck my arm back into my sling, sighing with relief as the weight is taken off my shoulder.
A fool with fonally berries.
Chapter 8. A quote from Effective Uses of Wild and Cultivated Herbs by Captain Lawrence Medina. There is an art to poison not often discussed, And that is timing. Only a master can properly dose and administer for effective onset. One must take into account the mass of the individual as well as the method of delivery. The woman's hall is quiet as I dress for the morning, the sun barely peeking above the horizon in the far windows. I take the dragon scale vest from where I left it to dry on the hanger at the end of my bed and slip it on over my short sleeve black shirt. It's a good thing I've gotten pretty adept at tightening the laces behind my back since Rhiannon isn't in her bed. At least one of us is getting a few much needed orgasms. Pretty sure there's a person or two scattered with their partners among the full bunks in here, too. The squad leaders talk a good game about enforcing curfew, but no one really cares. Well, except Dane. He cares about every rule. Dane. My chest tightens, and I smile as I finish braiding my hair into a crown. Seeing him is the best part of my day, even the moments when he's anything but personable in public. Even in the moments where he's consumed with trying to save me from this place. I grab my bag on the way out, passing by rows of empty beds that belong to the dozen women who haven't survived to see August, and shove open the door. There he is. Dane's eyes light up as he pushes off the wall of the hallway where he's obviously been waiting for me. Morning. I can't help the smile that curves my lips. You don't have to escort me to duty every morning, you know. It's the only time I get to see you when I'm not your squad leader, he counters, as we walk down the empty hallway, past the halls that will lead to our rooms if we survive threshing. Trust me, it's worth getting up an hour early, though I still can't figure out why you'd choose breakfast duty over every other assignment. I shrug. I have my reasons. Really, really, really good reasons. Though I do miss the extra hour of sleep I'd had before we chose our assignments last week. A door on the right flies open, and Dane darts in front of me, dragging me behind him with his arms so I face plant into his back. He smells like leather and soap and... Rhiannon, he snaps. Sorry, Rhiannon's eyes widen. I slip out of Dane's hold and move to his side so I can see her. I wondered where you were this morning. A grin spreads across my face as Tara appears next to her. Hey, Tara. Hey, Violet. She gives me a wave, then heads down the hallway, tucking her shirt into her pants. We have curfew for a reason, cadet. Dane lectures, and I fight the urge to roll my eyes. And you know that no one is supposed to be in the private dorms until after threshing. Maybe we were just up early, Rhiannon counters. You know, like you are right now. She glances between the two of us with a mischievous smirk. Dane rubs the bridge of his nose. Just get back to the dorms and pretend you slept there, will you? Absolutely, she squeezes my hand as she passes by. Way to go, I whisper quickly. She's had a thing for Tara since we got here. I know, right? She backs away with a smile, then turns to push through the hall doors. Monitoring the sex lives of first years was not what I had in mind when I applied to be a squad leader, Dane mutters, and we continue toward the kitchen. Oh, come on, like you weren't a first year yourself last year. He lifts his brows in thought and eventually shrugs. Fair point, and you're a first year now. His eyes slide my way as we near the arched doorway that leads to the rotunda, and his lips part like he's going to continue. But he looks away, pivoting to open the door for me. Why, Dane Atos, are you asking me about my sex life? I let my fingers trail along the exposed fangs of the green dragon pillar and bite back a smile as we walk by. No, he shakes his head, then pauses in thought. I mean, is there a sex life to ask about? We climb the steps that lead into commons, and I turn just before the door to face him. He's two steps below me, putting us at eye level. Since I got here, I tap my chin with my finger and smile. That's none of your business. Before I got here? Still none of your business. Another fair point,
His mouth curves into a grin that makes me wish it was his business, though. I turn around before I do something utterly foolish, like make it his business. We continue into Commons, walking past the empty study tables and the entrance to the library. It's nothing as awe-inspiring as the scribe's archives, but it has every tome I'll need for studying here.
Are you ready for today? Dane asks as we near the gathering hall. For the challenges to start this afternoon? My stomach knots. I'll be all right, I assure him, but he moves in front of me, halting my steps. I know you've been practicing with Rhiannon, but worry lines his forehead.
I've got it, I promise, looking into his eyes so he knows I mean it.
You don't have to worry about me.
Last night, Orin Seifert's name was posted next to mine, right where Brennan said it would be. He's a tall blonde in first wing with tolerable knife skills, but one hell of a punch.
I always worry about you.
Dane's hands curl into fists. Don't, I shake my head. I can handle myself.
I just don't want to see you get hurt again.
My ribs squeeze my heart like a vise. Then don't watch. I take his calloused hand in mine.
You can't save me from this, Dane. I'm going to be challenged once a week, just like every other cadet.
And it's not going to stop there. You can't protect me from Threshing or the Gauntlet or Jack Barlow.
You need to lay low with that one, Dane grimaces. Avoid that pompous ass whenever you can, Vi. Don't give him an excuse to come after you. He's already responsible for far too many names on the death roll.
Then the dragons are going to love him.
They always go for the vicious ones.
Dane squeezes my hand gently.
Just steer clear of him.
I blink. The advice is so different from Zayden's throw a few daggers at his head approach.
Zayden.
The knot of guilt that's been lodged in my stomach since last week grows a fraction bigger. By code, I should tell Dane about seeing marked ones under the oak tree. But I won't. Not because I told Zayden that I wouldn't, but because keeping the secret feels like the right thing to do.
I've never kept a secret from Dane in my life.
Violet, did you hear me? Dane asks, lifting a hand to cradle my face. Jerking my gaze to his, I nod and repeat, steer clear of Barlow. He drops his hand and shoves it into a pocket of his pants. Hopefully he'll forget all about his little vendetta against you.
Do most men forget when a woman holds a knife to their balls?
I cock an eyebrow at him.
No, he sighs.
You know, it's not too late to sneak you down to the scribes. Fitzgibbons will take you.
The bells ring, marking 5:15 and saving me from another session of Dane begging me to run away to the scribe quadrant.
I'll be all right. I'll see you at formation.
I give his hand a squeeze, then walk away, leaving him as I make my way to the kitchen. I'm always the first here, and today is no exception. I pocket the vial of dried, powdered fennel berries from my satchel and get started as the other workers come in, sleepy-eyed and grumbly. The powder is nearly white, nearly invisible as I take my place in the serving line an hour later, and completely undetectable as I sprinkle it over Orin Seifert's scrambled eggs when he approaches.
Keep the temperaments of each specific breed in mind when you decide which dragons to approach and which to run from at threshing,
Professor Kaori says, his serious dark eyes slashing toward his nose as he studies the new recruits for a beat. Then he changes the projection he's conjured from a green dagger tail to a red scorpion tail. He's an illusionist and the only professor in the quadrant with the signet ability to project what he sees in his mind, which makes this class one of my favorites. He's also the reason I knew exactly what Orin Seifert looked like. Do I feel guilty about blatantly misleading a professor about why I needed to find another cadet? No. Do I think it's cheating? Also no. I was doing exactly what Mira suggested and using my brain. The red scorpion tail in the center of our circled tables is a fraction of its actual size, 6 feet tall at most, but it's an exact replica of the actual fire breather waiting in the veil for threshing.
Red scorpion tails like
Grian here are the quickest to temper, Professor Kaori continues, his perfectly trimmed mustache curving as he smiles at the illusion like he's the dragon himself. We all take notes. So, if you offend him, you're...
Lunch, Riddick says from my left, and the class laughs. Even Jack Barlow, who hasn't quit glaring at me since his squad took over their quarter of the room a half hour ago, snorts.
Precisely, Professor Kaori responds. So, what's the best way to approach a red scorpion tail?
He glances around the room. I know the answer, but I keep my hand to myself, heeding Dane's advice to lay low.
You don't, Rhiannon mutters next to me, and I huff a laugh under my breath.
They prefer that you approach from the left and from the front, if possible, a woman from one of the other squads answers.
Excellent, Professor Kaori nods. For this threshing, there are three red scorpion tails willing to bond.
The image changes in front of us to a different dragon.
How many dragons are there in total? Rhiannon asks.
100 this year, Professor Kaori answers, changing the image again. But some might change their minds during presentation in about 2 months, depending on what they see.
My stomach hits the floor.
That's 37 fewer than last year.
Maybe even fewer if they don't like the look of us after we have to parade by them for their perusal 2 days before threshing. Then again, there's usually fewer cadets after that particular event anyway.
Professor Kaori's dark eyebrows rise.
Yes, Cadet Sorengale, it is. And 26 fewer than the year before that.
Fewer dragons are choosing to bond, but the number of riders entering the quadrant has remained steady. My mind whirls. Attacks at the eastern borders are increasing according to every battle brief, and yet there are fewer dragons willing to bond in order to defend Navarre.
Will they tell you why they won't bond? Another first year asks.
No, jackass. Jack scoffs, his icy blue gaze narrowing on the cadet. Dragons only talk to their bonded riders, just like they only give their full name to their bonded rider. You should know that by now.
Professor Kaori sends Jack a look that shuts the first year's mouth, but doesn't stop him from sneering at the other cadet.
They don't share their reasons, our instructor says, and anyone who respects their life won't ask a question they're not willing to answer.
Do the numbers affect the wards? Orly asks from where she sits behind me, tapping her quill against the edge of her desk. She's never happy sitting still.
Professor Kaori's jaw ticks twice.
We're not sure. The number of bonded dragons has never affected the integrity of Navarre's wards before. But I'm not about to lie to you and say that we're not seeing increased breaches when you know from battle brief that we are.
The wards are faltering at a rate that makes my stomach tense every time Professor De Vera starts our daily battle brief. Either we're weakening, or our enemies are getting stronger. Both possibilities mean the cadets in this room are needed more than ever. Even me.
The image changes to Sigail, the navy blue dragon bonded to Zayden. My stomach pitches as I remember the way she looked right through me that first day.
You won't have to worry about how to approach blue dragons, since there are none willing to bond this threshing. But you should be able to recognize Sigail if you see her, Professor Kaori says. So you can fucking run, Riddick drawls. I nod along while others laugh. She's a blue dagger tail, the rarest of the blues, and yes, if you see her without her bonded rider, you should definitely find somewhere else to be. Ruthless does not begin to describe her, nor does she abide but what we assume to be what the dragons consider law. She even bonded the relative of one of her previous riders, which you all know is typically forbidden. But Sigail does whatever she wants, whenever she wants. In fact, if you see any of the blues, don't approach them. Just run. Riddick repeats, raking his hand through his floppy brown hair. Run, Professor Kaori agrees with a smile, the mustache above his top lip
quivering slightly. There are a handful of other Blues in active service, but you'll find them all along the Espen Mountains in the east, where the fighting is most intense. They're all intimidating, but Segeil is the most powerful of them all. My breath catches. No wonder Zayden can wield shadows. Shadows that can yank daggers out of trees. Shadows that can probably throw those same daggers. And yet, he let me live. I shove the kernel of warmth that thought gives me far, far away. Probably just to screw with you, a monster playing with his prey before pouncing.
What about the black dragon? The first year next to Jack asks. There's one here, right?
Jack's face lights up.
I want that one.
Not that it's going to matter. Professor Kaori flicks his wrist and Segeil disappears, and a massive black dragon takes her place. Even the illusion is bigger, making me crane my neck slightly to see its head. But just to appease your curiosity, since this is the only time you'll ever see him, here is the only other black besides General Melgrin's.
He's huge, Rhiannon says. And is that a club tail?
No, a Morning Star tail. He has the same bludgeoning power of a club tail, but those spikes will eviscerate a person just as well as a dagger tail.
Best of both worlds, Jack calls out. He looks like a killing machine.
He is, Professor Kaori answers. And honestly, I haven't seen him in the last 5 years, so this image is more than a little outdated. But since we have him up here, what can you tell me about black dragons?
They're the smartest and most discerning, Orly calls out.
They're the rarest, I add in. There hasn't been one born in the last century.
Correct. Professor Kaori spins the illusion again, and I'm met with a pair of glaring yellow eyes. They're also the most cunning. There's no such thing as outsmarting a black dragon. This one is a little over 100, which makes him about middle-aged. He's revered as a battle dragon among their kind, and if not for him, we probably would have lost during the Tirish Rebellion. Add to it that he's a Morning Star tail and... he's one of the deadliest dragons in Navarre.
I bet he powers one hell of a signet. How do you approach him?
Jack asks, leaning forward in his seat. There's pure avarice in his eyes, mirrored by his friend next to him.
That's the last thing this kingdom needs, someone as cruel as Jack bonding to a black dragon.
No, thank you.
You don't,
Professor Kaori answers. He hasn't agreed to bond since his previous and only rider was killed during the uprising. And the only way you'd ever be near him is if you're in the Vale, which you won't be, because you'd be incinerated before you ever got through the gorge.
The pale redhead across the circle from me shifts in her seat and tugs her sleeve down to cover her rebellion relic.
Someone should ask him again, Jack urges.
It doesn't work that way, Barlow.
Now, there is only one other black dragon, which is in service.
General Melgrin's, Sawyer says. His book is closed in front of him, but I can't blame him. I'd hardly be taking notes either if this was the second time I'd gone through this class.
Coda, right?
Yes, Professor Kaori nods. The eldest of their den and a sword tail.
But just for curiosity's sake,
Jack's glacial blue gaze doesn't stray from the illusion of the unbonded black dragon still being projected.
What signet ability would this guy gift his rider?
Professor Kaori closes his fist and the illusion disappears.
There's no telling. Signets are the result of the unique chemistry between rider and dragon, and usually say more about the rider than the dragon. The stronger the bond, and the more powerful the dragon, the stronger the signet.
Fine. What was his previous rider's? Jack asks.
Naolin's signet was siphoning. Professor Kaori's shoulders fall. He could absorb power from various sources, other dragons, other riders, and then use it or redistribute it. Badass. Riddick's tone has more than a little hero worship. He was, Professor Kaori agrees. What kills someone with that kind of signet? Jack asks, crossing his arms over his thick chest.
Professor Kaori glances at me for a heartbeat before looking away.
He attempted to use that power to revive a fallen rider, which didn't work because there's no signet capable of resurrection, and depleted himself in the process. To use a phrase you'll become accustomed to after threshing, he burned out and died next to that rider.
Something in my chest shifts, a feeling that I can't explain and yet can't shake. The bells ring, signaling the hour is up, and we all begin to gather our things. The squads filter out to the hallway, emptying the room, and I rise from behind my desk, shouldering my satchel as Rhiannon waits for me by the door, a puzzled expression on her face.
It was Brennan, wasn't it? I ask Professor Kaori.
Sadness fills his gaze as he meets mine.
Yes. He died trying to save your brother. But Brennan was too far gone.
Why would he do that? I shift the weight of my satchel. Resurrection isn't possible. Why would he essentially kill himself when Brennan was already gone?
A stampede of grief tramples my heart, stealing my breath. Brennan never would have wanted anyone to die for him. That wasn't in his nature.
Professor Kaori sits back against his desk, pulling at the short, dark hairs of his mustache as he stares at me.
Being a Sorengale doesn't do you any favors in here, does it?
I shake my head. There are more than a few cadets who would like to take me and my last name down a peg. He nods.
It won't be like that.